Pop introduced the Angels, Rose Tattoo, but here's the biggest of them all, Steve Mascord with White Line Fever.
It's episode 6 of White Line Fever. I've got Scott and Rob here from Anthrax. Very special guests. How are you guys?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good. How's it going, man?
Good. Now, you're doing 2 full days of promotion. What's that like? Do you sort of try and guess what people are going to ask you when they walk up? Is it hard work?
I pretty much know. There's a few questions that every single person asks, like, what's the craziest thing that ever happened on tour? And is the Big Four coming to Australia? And what were your inspirations for this new album? And, you know, there's generally the same, I'd say half the questions are the same almost every interview. And, you know, but every interview is different. So you just answer the questions as you're asked. You know what I mean? Once in a while, someone asks something really stupid and I have to, you know, make them feel like a jackass. Like when this guy asked us earlier, he said, so, you know, do you listen to, what was it like? Do you listen to what the fans want you to do when you're making a, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how we work. All the fans write in their ideas and then we just, that's how we work. We don't even write our songs. The fans write our songs. Like, it's just amazing when someone like asks a question like that. It's like, did you think about that before the words came out of your mouth?
Okay, the risk of asking a stupid question and being made to feel like a jackass.
Is the Big Four coming to Australia? I don't know.
No. Is it like worship music, like an instruction, or is it a description? Worship music.
That's a good question. No one's ever asked that before, actually.
I think it's open for interpretation, you know?
Yeah. I think it could be both. The way I take it is, because Charlie came up with the title, apparently he woke up at 5 in the morning or something, and his TV was on, and he saw an advertisement for a CD that said worship music, like basically a bunch of Christian songs or something, but the title stuck in his head in the context of Anthrax. And I never asked him that. I didn't find that out till we started doing press for the record, because to me, I just heard it, and it made sense to me, because I worship music every day. Music is my life. I've been worshiping music since I was like 8 years old. And I feel like music is something absolutely worth worshiping. Music's been here longer than religion. Like cavemen were pounding on drums and stuff. You know, I guess you could argue the same time they were like, you know, looking at the sun as like, thank God for that. Otherwise, what would we do? But to me, music is something worth worshiping. And that's what I get out of it. But it could be a command as well. Because you should tell people, you know what, worship music. It might make your life happier.
Mm-hmm. And before we were on air, you were talking about the reaction to the album, and it's been good, but when it comes before the album's actually released, that becomes a little bit annoying.
Of course. Well, it means that people are stealing the record, you know? It's obviously, we don't support that. I mean, we work really hard. We busted our ass on this. Our ass is on this record.
And it costs us money to do it.
Yeah, of course.
But the reaction since it's been released, the legitimate reaction, has been awesome. Has it surprised you?
The people who actually pay for the record seem to really like it. Yes. People who have spent their hard-earned money on worship music are really loving the album. And it's very satisfying for us, obviously, for people to like something that we've worked so hard on. And they're hearing it the way we hear it. And we also find that people are listening to the whole record. They're not just picking out one song or another song. It seems like people are having a problem deciding what is their favorite song because they listen to the record from front to back, and that's how we look at albums. An album should be something enjoyed from start to finish, not just picking out one song here or one song there.
We'll play a song now. Do you guys want to introduce one, pick one? Could be anything, but I suppose it should be off worship music.
Yeah. Let's start with the first song on the record, Earth on Hell, which is one of the most aggressive tunes on the album. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Hey, this is Tommy from the Casanovas, and you're on White Line Fever.
Thanks to the fellas from Anthrax. They'll be back next week, but that sound you just heard in the background is the end of the 2011 Rugby League season, 10 Manly beating the Warriors, and it was an exciting second half. The Warriors coming back and looking like they were going to really maybe send the game into overtime, but Manly, well, the game started with Back in Black over the PA, and that certainly was better than Eagle Rock, but in the end, You Shook Me All Night Long, which is what we just heard just before the siren sounded. That summed up Manly's performance. Just relentless and physical and thoroughly deserved winners. Now, we'll be assessing the game. We'll be poring over it during this week's program. We'll go into another song just for now. This is Driving and Crying, a song from 2 years ago. It's called I See Georgia.
Every time I hear that song, playing from an old Fever from Monster Magnet, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to White Line Fever. That was Driving and Crying with I See Georgia. I love that song. It's going to be a good road song, and I'm going to be on the road for about the next 5 months. Now, the reason this show will never succeed is because it's got such a small demographic. Rugby league and rock and roll is like, it's about five people. But if there's anyone I've ever met that fits both demographics, it's Dave Benewick, who can equally be found as a byline in the sports pages and on the street, that shows my age, in drum media, in the gig guide. Dave Benewick, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Dave. Good to be here.
Now, tell us what a tough job it is walking the line, 1 foot in the music camp and 1 foot in the rugby league camp.
I used to walk in a music camp a lot more than a rugby league camp, but now, I suppose you're always at games and you're always kind of expected to work really hard, so trying to know when you can do a gig is pretty difficult, I suppose. But I don't know, you just get out of practice a bit, out of nick, you know, like short of a gallop or whatever, and you just, when you do play, you kind of, it's not like when you used to play four nights a week, yeah.
But, you know, like, unlike Eric Grove Jr., you know, most people in music know he's a footballer, and most people in football know he's a musician. But in your case, you've got these two separate lives, really, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose. But I was a musician for a long time first, and it's more of a hobby now, I suppose. But I'd still like to do some more recording stuff. I've done a lot in the past. You miss it when you don't do it that often, and when you do, it's kind of special now. When you do, when you do gigs now, there's no like shit gigs like there used to be, because you don't do them that often, so you kind of enjoy them more, I suppose. Yeah.
Now, we've both had a couple of beers, so let's talk about let's not talk about what is different about rock and roll and rugby league. Let's talk about what is similar. You know, the people you encounter. I mean, do they kind of go hand in glove a little bit, or do you find it completely different?
Oh yeah, I think they do. I mean, I have a lot of friends in Melbourne who are musicians, and they sort of, I guess, were the first people I saw marrying some sort of football code with their music, singing about it.
I was gonna say, your friends in Melbourne married footballers.
some of them would definitely like to. Marrying, singing about footy grounds and footy players and the history of the game that they follow and all of that. So. There's a bit of that in Sydney as well, I suppose. I mean, Perry Keys is a good example, and we've done a bit of that as well, I guess. And but I think it's a bigger thing down there. But what is similar? I think it's very sort of grounded, or it's a grassroots sort of thing. Like the sort of music that I play, so I guess it's sort of folky, sort of rootsy sort of music. So it's sort of grounded and a little bit working class, if that doesn't sound too contrived. And
I've heard you described as a Billy Bragg of Australia.
Yeah, I've been that everyone, and it's partly because of what I look like, I think. But I do love Billy Bragg, yeah, and I met him once, I think. But what was I going to say?
No, I was talking about the connections, yeah. You know, the experience.
You churn out a couple of songs about footy. It does get people, like, they understand the culture of where it's coming from and the city that they're in and how it all works.
It's not enough of it in rugby league, though, is there? Like it's under, like, in the arts, as it is, as it were, as it will be. Other sports are better represented in the arts than rugby league, aren't they, really?
Yeah, I think that's probably true, yeah. In Sydney, maybe there's more of a distinction between those things, whereas in some other places they are sort of joined together a bit more, perhaps. Yeah.
And so, when you interview these footballers, I mean, and maybe some of them, let's face it, most of them are good fellas that we deal with on a week-to-week basis, but every now and then you get a bit of arrogance. And do you think they'd treat you differently if they knew you were standing on stage and there were like girls throwing their bras at you every week?
I don't know about the latter, but I think they would. You know, they just assume you are.
Well, we think they're. Sometimes we think they're two dimensional or one dimensional, and they think we are. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, they. Yeah, they. And mostly they. You know, often they don't know who you are, and they just. Mm. trot out the lines they've got to trot out. But I think if you got to know them and they got to know you, it's like anybody really. You know, you would find some common ground. I did actually say to Eric Groth Jr. once that I'd played in some vans and made some CDs, and would he be interested in having a chat about that particular thing sometime? But I think then he was sort of got injured and retired and sort of disappeared, definitely from rep teams, but from the scene, yeah.
If this show ever goes professional, then he'll probably first choice as co-host, I think. I've already spoken to him about it. Hello, Eric, if you're listening. But before we go, I'd love it if you send me a sound file of that song about Platform 16.
19.
Platform 19. If you can introduce it for the listeners about what it's about. It's got a big rugby league reference in it.
Yeah.
And if you can also, like, give us permission to use it and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can definitely use it. I've got no use for it. I wrote it about 20 years ago, really, and it's, it is set on Platform 19 at Central in Sydney, where I did notice when I lived in the inner west that if you catch a train to the inner west or the western suburbs, it leaves from Platform 19, but that train actually comes down from the North Shore, so it makes it a pretty interesting sociological sort of point on the map. But, then it sort of imagines, the old Fibro Silvertails kind of battle there, and I didn't actually see that, but I could imagine it happening there. And, if we ever get a Manly West's Grand Final West Tigers, then maybe we'll be able to issue it as a single again or something. Yeah,
I'm sure we could talk all day and all night about the art of songwriting, all that sort of stuff, but we haven't got time. So even though most everyone's going to be listening to this after the Grand Final, enjoy tomorrow, the Grand Final.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I won't say what I'm going for, but listen to the song and you might get an idea. Yeah.
Well, I'm waiting here at Central, where the bars are heading westwards, homewards from a Magpies Manly game. Well, their team is cup to hide in, or they're carrying a mate too drunk to walk, or let alone recall his name. When the train pulls in, after winding its way down through Wollongong, Tarramurra, to the heart of Sydney town, as the doors beat this song, all the knock-off girls get off, and the sea town boys get on, on. All the knock-off girls get off, and the black town boys get on. Commotion at this home of locomotion is as telling and as desperate as a war. The boys offer their compliments, yeah, invitations to ascend, still as hopeless as a football scar. But the girls fight back with the bluest tongues of all, in accents they have cultured at the private schools up north. There are battles to be won, the knock-off girls get off, and the black-town boys get on, on. It's the knock-off girls get off, and the Fairfield boys get on. To smash the glass barrier, the train must gather speed. The western suburbs of a city that calls itself East, where migrant hands are branded and unbought fish and chips are piled, and home repairers scrape the back door winning from the wall. Suburbs Magpies just got hammered once again by the Manly team that bought up all their stars. The compensation's easily found in a battle with the girls who look like they've just landed here from Mars. When the train pulls out, the biggest journey west, through Bramble up to Liverpool, the home of Sydney's rest, where the fight goes on. By the knock up girls get off, and the sea town boys get on, on. By the knock up girls get off, and the black town.
David Benwick with Platform 19. We're back on White Line Fever, and we're standing here in the shadows of the 2011 NRL season. I'm here with Andrew Webster from the Daily Telegraph. Did you know that David Benwick could sing?
I did know David Benwick could sing. I didn't know he could write either. No, that's very harsh. No, it is.
So, what did you think of this evening's events?
I thought it was an amazing game. I thought it was very good. I thought it was very good that the Warriors came back as they did, because everyone was thinking once Manly got that try, which had shades of 1996 grand final against St. George all over it, I thought. You just thought Manly were going to run away with it. So it was good to see the Warriors hold on and come back with that little halfback. He's going to be some player, isn't he? The big talking point, though, is what did they say? What did David Gallop and Brett Stewart say to each other after the game?
It was, well, there's two kind of bits of intrigue after the game. One is Des Hasler's future, and he knocked one rumour on the head. He's not going to the Bulldogs next year, maybe the year after. But the other thing was Glenn and Brett Stewart each made a point of speaking to David Gallop and everyone wanted to know if they were even going to shake David's hand because of what happened 2 years ago. And they made a point of talking to him. It's like they had an intention. They went into the encounter with an intention. But David's expression after the two conversations were vastly different.
They were, but the thing is, afterwards when they were asked about this, although Brett didn't speak to any of the reporters, but Glenn said it was all about moving on. I don't think David Gallup's reaction, facial expression, suggested it was.
Well, I thought it did after speaking to Glenn.
I've been sniffing around this. I don't know when this podcast goes out.
It doesn't,
But I don't think it was about moving on. From Manly might have thought the comments were about moving on. From what I understand, from what is coming out of the NRL side of things, it wasn't about moving on, or they didn't word it that way. So, hopefully that's the end of it, though. Don't you reckon? Like, they just need to let it go, and I can understand why it's been such an issue for them. But they've channeled all this anger and all this hate towards David Gallop because they had no one else to direct it at. But now they just need to build a bridge and get over it.
Do you think in any way it might sour the evening a little bit as over the course of the next week? People listen to this during the week. As more comes out about it, there's more speculation, more is revealed. Will it in any way detract from Manly's success, or do you think it'll die a death?
I don't know. It probably depends on us, doesn't it? Don't you reckon?
Well, I'm fascinated with it, and I'm sure you are, and I think most of the readers and listeners and viewers are as well.
What did he say? I wanted to know what was said.
The lip-reading expert is in waiting now. I think a lip-reading expert has got a phone call, at about 10 o'clock on a public holiday Sunday night, saying, come into the newspaper office, we need you.
Maybe we could get the same person who went through Phil Gould's doodles and deciphered that. Maybe we get that person to look at David Gallop and
newspapers used to have in-house lawyers. Now they're going to need in-house lip readers.
Exactly.
So have you enjoyed the year?
I have. It's been a great year. I think it's been a good year. It's been a long year, hasn't it? They always seem.
It's
to
not get... over. There's international football coming up.
I know, that's the thing. You love the international football. I heard on the ABC call there was plenty of references to who was it? Who was it from the Vulcans that are playing?
Well, the co-commentator was Daniel Anderson, who's coaching Samoa.
I know. Well, it's good. His career's kicked on.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to us, Andrew. And you have a really good summer, or whatever you're planning to do. What are you planning to do?
Are we having Mad Monday tomorrow?
Tomorrow is Monday. But I've got a lot of packing to do. I've got to go away.
Come
and stuff.
On, this is always the day when we get cut loose. So
yes. Well, anyway, and we've got another song coming up. We love Chickenfoot. New Chickenfoot album. This is called 3½ Letters.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Maskey.
Old. married to my childhood sweetheart. Two beautiful girls, 2.5 and 4. Worked 9 years to plant my father worked and his father before him. I have a BA, but laid off 7 months ago. It's been tough like so many others, but I still believe. Can you help me, brother? Can you help? Afghanistan, spent 4 years in the military service. I'm 24, strong, and I can't find work in my hometown. Married with one beautiful son, 7 months old today. Never had a chance to buy a home, can't afford the apartment we've been living in. Moving in with Debbie's parents, whose home is now in foreclosure. Can you help?
I need a job! I need a job! I'm willing to work, but I need a job! Stand in the streets!
From Electric Mary, and you are on White Line Fever.
Welcome back to the show. This is a bit where you get only me, no guests. Firstly, I'd like to thank Tim Gable for the introduction. He was so modest, he didn't even drop his own name in that intro, but it was great. Thanks. And he did really introduce, I think it was in Mount Isa, the Angels and Rose Tattoo. So there you go. It's a huge honour to have him introduce episode 6 of White Line Fever. Now, aside from it being grand final week, October 2 also brought us a big international web event. It was Guns N' Roses playing at Rock in Rio. Now, as with any Guns N' Roses concert, you have to expect weirdness. For a start, despite reports that there would be enormous fines for coming on late, I made it about 2 hours late that Axl brought the band on stage, and it was pouring rain in Rio. Now, I managed to tape a little bit of this show, and I want to highlight a few things. Firstly, just something cool. It was a time, a part of the gig where the band seemed like they were going to launch into a version of U2's Sunday Bloody Sunday.
that's the great thing about this lineup of Guns N' Roses, is that they're all such great musicians and they can be spontaneous, and that you go to a show not really knowing what to expect. But unfortunately, that can also lead to some car crashes. And it wasn't Sunday Bloody Sunday they actually played. It was November Rain, and some forgotten lyrics and some off-the-road rustiness turned it into a little bit of a mess. During the broadcast were all over the shop as well, cutting in and out, stereo to mono. But a really weird thing happened. They seemed to pick up voices backstage, including a female voice, telling the band what to do. Let's see if you can just listen carefully here.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the guitar, Mr. Ron Bumblefoot Thaw.
You hear that? Hey, Tommy, stay out here. That's a reference to Tommy Stinson. It's a voice we would hear again a short time later.
Oh. I asked these guys if they could tell me what drugs I'm on. They said no, but they could tell me what drugs Tommy's on. Night train.
Did you hear that? There were four different voices confirming that the next song was to be Night Train, including the same female voice we heard earlier. There's just a couple more things I want to highlight. The first one is this.
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting rabbits.
That's actually during the breakdown of Knocking on Heaven's Door, but the next outburst during a song seems to be a little more serious. It's during Patience.
Set sugar, make it slow.
The weather, or whether it's Tommy Stinson, or whether the teleprompters aren't working properly and that's why he's skipping a few lines. But anyway, as I said, always an interesting night when you go see Guns N' Roses. Okay, housekeeping time, and we've got one more guest to come. It's Mark Gable. But don't forget, you can listen to the program round the clock at whitelinefever.ning.com. You can also listen to it on demand at stevemascord.com. Down the bottom of the left corner, you can download it for your iPod and what have you. No news on iTunes yet, but hopefully we'll be on there soon. And don't forget the stevemascord.com Facebook page. Now, when you next hear from me, I will be in Mexico going to Sammy Hagar's birthday bash, stopping in the Cook Islands on the way too, so hopefully we'll track down a couple of Kiwi players ahead of the Four Nations. Okay, here's a new Jane's Addiction song, and we'll be back with one more guest, Mark Gable. And aside from that, we'll see you next week.
We didn't know that it would blow up with such might. The stars are even brighter. Could just abide tonight. Sent out the shockwaves, filled up the outer space. Even the ghosts came to the late, late, late show. I just
segment of the show this week, the post grand final show, and I've got a very special guest. I don't know if I should call him an arch Manly fan, but he is a Manly fan. It's Mark Gable from the Choir Boys. Are you in the warm glow of a grand final victory at the moment? Are you still celebrating?
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm celebrating, you know, but I'm you know, I know there's a lot of controversy around Manly, you know, for certain reasons. But I'm, you know, to be honest with you, I'm pleased that they won over New Zealand, right, the Warriors, because I'm still, you know, I'm not a strong devotee of any kind of sport apart from, you know, aerobics or something. but I'm still perplexed as to why there's a New Zealand team in the grand final. It doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I know that there's obviously a logical reason. You can explain it to me. But, you know, I've been out of the loop for a bit and I just sort of took a bit of an interest this year, but I still can't understand how this has occurred. You know, it's almost as ludicrous as the Sydney Swans, you know. Like, the Swans are actually a Melbourne team, but now they're based in Sydney. And, you know, these things confuse. What are we going to have next, you know, that Budapest are going to win the grand final next year or 3 years in the future? That's what's going to happen.
But isn't it more
mystifying? So I'm pleased that Manly.
Is it more mystifying for you that most of New South Wales and Sydney were cheering for the Warriors?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know. Well, you know, it is weird, you know, but, you know, I can understand it. You know, as I say, there's a bit of controversy about the whole thing, you know. And Manly seem to be an extremely unpopular team. Look, football isn't like it used to be. Like, when I was a kid and we used to go down to Brookvale Oval to watch the football, you know, we actually, you know, the guys actually came from the area, you know. And, you know, it's a totally different beast now, you know. But it had a personality, it had a character. Now, I'm sounding retro and I'm sounding reflective and I'm sounding old, but I am. And I kind of, I miss those days when the local team, like, you know, the Sea Eagles, were made up of basically local guys. And so it was for Balmain and so it was for the rest of them. You know, and now, you know, can any of them, you know, do they speak, you know, English? Or do they speak, you know, Hungarian? I don't know.
We're on a sort of Eastern European theme at the moment. Tell us what you're up to, because this long-lived bond, can you tell people what that's all about?
Well, the long-lived bond tribute shows, well, they're a tribute show, but it's basically all the guys, or most of the guys that were there in the old days, you know, like Paul DeMarco on drums, has been around forever. Angry Anderson, of course, who's, you know, an old stable mate of mine from the Alberts days, and AC/DC were, you know, at Alberts, of course, with the Rose Tattoo, Choir Boys and all the rest of it. You know, John Swan, who claims to have taught Bon Scott how to sing, and of course, Dave Gleason, who actually knows more about AC/DC than any guy I've ever known. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the song is, he knows the lyrics. Whereas we, you know, the other three guys, we all have to learn the lyrics of the songs. So it's really a celebration of, it's really a celebration of that era when Bon was in AC/DC, which really is the most important era of AC/DC. It's not the most successful era. They were really an up-and-coming band all the way through that. But it really is the quintessential music. I mean, it's all the music that we know. It's all the music that matters. I mean, you know, sing me a song off Flick of the Switch, will you? You know, come on. Sing me one, Steve. You see, you can't sing me one.
I know the song's Flick of the Switch. She'll blow the sky high. She'll blow the sky high.
Well, we used to have
Bedlam in Belgium, see?
We used to have a joke. Yeah. We used to have a joke that after AC/DC did, you know, Back in Black, and then For Those About to Rock, we figured that, you know, every song went, you know, like, you know, when you heard Sink the Pink, we'd go, Sink the Pink, and it just kind of fell in that way. And I know that, you know, these albums have sold truckloads, but really, what was AC/DC and what propelled them to success were those years with Bond. Mm. They were incredible years, and musically they were just phenomenal songs. And, I mean, you really get an appreciation when you come along and see the show, and it's like every song is a masterpiece.
Mm. Awesome. And I also heard a dance version of Run to Paradise the other day. It's going to be released shortly. What's the background to that?
These guys approached me, and they're in a dance hip hop group, Australian group, and they said, "Would you mind if we did this?" I said, "No, I don't mind if you do it." You know, so they've done it, and it sounds pretty good. You know, but I'm not. Once again, I'm not a devotee of that kind of music, right? So you know, it's sort of like this: you got the hip hop thing happening. You know, we're going to go to a party, and you know, and then it goes, "You don't want anyone," and then it hits with the chorus with the hook, you know. And so, you know, I mean, it's when Nick Skits had a hit with it, you know, like I don't know how many years ago, 10 years ago or something like that. So who knows? It might work.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you one more thing before we go, and that is there a choir boy song that you would like to dedicate to Manly's premiership triumph? Is there any that have got geographical references? Battle Boulevard, is that set in Manly, or you know, is there a Manly choir boy song?
Well, you know, Run to Paradise was about the Northern Beaches, but you'd have to say Boys Will Be Boys. and it's not so much about Manly now, because who are they? It's more about Manly years ago when they really were a bunch of boys.
great historian, Steve. It's lovely to, you know, it goes with the beard and, you know, and, the, and you can tweak the mo, mate. So I'll let you do the history.